When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fuck you. This is going back to why the justice system is fucking broken.
Because you're using a fallacy to justify your...
I prayed and he shouldn't get any jail. Fuck you. I'm just going to fuck you. Just that. Just fuck you. That is bullshit.
It is
such bullshit. I'm fucking over that crap. These people are violent offenders. These are the very people that you sit and say, it's only violent offenders that should be in jail. And then you actually get a violent offender in front of you and you say that shit. Fucking makes me so mad.
It is time now for something positive.
We might be headed to the promised land.
The promised land.
And finding our external liberty once we internally liberate ourselves.
The problem can only be solved when there is a kind of coalition of conscience.
Because that is how it works. This is the beginning. It is not the finale. And that's why we're here. And that's why we rally.
We've got to be that creative minority.
Get in the way. I got in trouble. It was good trouble. It was necessary trouble.
Franklin, I know we've got to do something.
Welcome back to Public Access America. Check out our live stream on YouTube. I didn't get to say it, but congratulations to John Deere. How about that?
They got what they wanted. They got their stuff all sorted out.
Yeah, I love that. That's what unions do. Are you a big union guy?
I see the benefits in some unions and some not. I've been one of those people where I've seen firsthand where unions have benefited people,
mm-hmm,
and especially in terms of safety and health of their employees. But I've also been firsthand to see how there are certain unions out there that are just, they don't pull their fucking weight, and they're literally just a cash grab. And the people that are under them are just unhappy in general, and they can't get their union leadership to actually do anything useful for them.
It is a micro government, isn't it? It could be good. It could be bad.
And that's the tough part. Genuinely, I do support the ability for workers to band together, especially to demand safety changes. Like having worked in some dangerous industries, like the oil and gas industry, like safety should always be a priority no matter what. And when your employees are telling you that there's something going on that's unsafe, you need to be pro-employee and you need to figure out what you got to do in order to make something as safe as possible. There's a lot of things my father and I don't agree on, but my father has been one of those people when it comes to working in the oil field. Like he has shut down job sites over safety issues.
Good.
Because it's, it's important, people want, nobody should want to, finish the job at the cost of somebody being maimed or killed.
Right. Somebody's losing an arm. So we get one more barrel out. If it makes sense.
Right. No. And so there's a lot of cases out there where I've seen unions do some great work. So I really think it just depends on the union and the union leadership.
I like that. Okay. I love unions, so I'm a big fan of them. Oh, Jeffrey.
What you got?
Wow. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible story, but, we don't expose China enough. And a tennis star in China that I really apologize to everybody. I don't know how to say her name. She went missing because she alleged a high-ranking official or former official abused her sexually. Mm-hmm. And, oh, man, it's so gross. That the Olympics, they're calling them out. They might want to boycott Beijing. Mm-hmm. You know, unless an investigation is started. I want to say that I wasn't supporting the Olympics in Beijing to begin with. I think we should boycott them for their treatment of Uyghurs and, you know, just their general treatment of their own people. So did you hear about this? Did you have any thoughts on it? Should I shorthand some more to you?
No, I've read up on this one and this is really fucked up, but I unfortunately wish that this wasn't the case. You know, this is one of those ones where we're shitting on China for this because it's China, but any other woman who's ever accused a politician of sexual misconduct gets the same level of treatment, silenced and poo-pooed. It's just that in this case, you know, she's disappeared, but in you know, cases like here, you know,
you just get
this entire level of, oh, well, what was she doing? Well, did she deserve it? It's like, the fuck is this bullshit?
You know,
it's a greater problem that exists across the world.
Yeah.
And it's convenient for people here to shit on China over this, but they're going to be the same. There's a lot of them that are going to be the same people who won't demand this level of openness with stuff that happens here.
I mean, like Monica Lewinsky was shunned, and she was shunned, shit on, I mean, bastardized. Mm-hmm. She was everything. And now, like 15 years later, she has a documentary out, a book out. She's on all the talk shows. People love her now. Mm-hmm. And that's never going to happen for this tennis star. And I think that's the big difference here. This tennis star is never going to come back. And what it made me think, I had a note and I erased it because I was like, is this the future that Trump supporters want? The authoritarian government where a politician can just see you on the street, pick you up, rape you, dump you out, and then have somebody come and just disappear you. Is that what, because that's what we're headed for if we vote for an authoritarian, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. So I wanted this covered because this is our future. This is 20 years from now if Trump wins, you know?
Right.
So I want people to get used to this. I mean, and for the record, not every politician is straight. There's a lot of politicians that like men too. And mm-hmm. So you have to realize this. You could get raped and dumped, you mm-hmm. know, white guys that support them, that get close to these people. So
I was going to say, there's been far more Republicans that have been caught sucking dicks in airport bathrooms than there have been Democrats.
Exactly. And so that should be a concern for every white man that wants to get close to this.
Well, and here's the thing is, like, I don't care if somebody wants to suck a dick. I question the need for it to be in an airport bathroom. That's what the fuck? Yeah. Airport bathrooms are gross.
Risky behavior. I'm not but
the thing is that, you know, it's this weird predatory system that has allowed this silencing to continue. And the fact of the matter is that, like I said, it's easy for us to shit on China, over this because it's China.
I want to shit on China for this.
We do almost the exact same thing here. It's just that you don't get disappeared.
Right.
You might get Epstein, but
you might get disappeared. But in China, the odds are greater. And I wanted to address this because I don't think a lot of people are talking about China, and I think they get silenced when they do, and we don't have that issue. So if somebody's going to bring it up, I think that's gross. I think we should all boycott the Beijing Olympics, and now here's another reason for it.
Well, that's you know, in the same vein, in the same news cycle. I don't know if this is on your list, but there's a 20-year-old that just got convicted of raping a couple of minors. And the judge is a quote-unquote democratic judge who's not afraid to admit that he prayed about this case and sentenced the guy to 0 days in jail.
Oh.
I'm like, fuck you. This is going back to why the justice system is fucking broken.
Because you're using a fallacy to justify your
I prayed and he shouldn't get any jail. fuck you. I'm just going to fuck you. Just that. Just fuck you. That is bullshit.
It is such bullshit.
I'm fucking over that crap. These are people are violent offenders. These are the very people that you sit that say it's only violent offenders that should be in jail. And then you actually get a violent offender in front of you and you say that shit. Fucking makes me so mad. Yeah, we've touched on that a little bit. Debbie is bringing up a great point. It's about the uneven application. And it's stuff that we talked about, like with Rittenhouse and Ahmaud Arbery's cases. The application is so uneven.
Okay, I think it's like the Statue of David. If you look at it from behind, it's a great ass. But if you look at it from the front, it's just a little dick. And I think it's all on the perspective. If you're a white guy, the criminal justice system looks just fine. But if you're a vulnerable woman, it's fucked. If you're a black person, it's fucked. If you're a Latino, it's fucked. If you're LGBT, it's fucked. You know?
Exactly. And that's exactly what Debbie was just saying, is that if you're a white guy, you get, you know, your life is ahead of you and this, that, and the other, but everybody else, it's, you know, you get the book thrown at you. And that's this uneven application is such bullshit.
Agreed. We'll have to get Debbie on to literally talk more about that, because that's smart. That's a smart conversation to have. Mm-hmm. Although we all know it happens. Somebody asked me, like, why would Kyle Rittenhouse get off? And I said, because it's a two-tiered system where if you can afford it, you can avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly.
Well, I mean, it's. I wish I could say it's just two-tiered. It's number one, if you can afford it, you can avoid it. And then, so that's number one. And then number two, it's if you're a certain skin color on top of that, you can avoid it.
Oh, sure.
We've had rich black men, you know, and rich Latino men get convicted of shit that their white counterparts have never been convicted of.
Maybe. I think it's a sliding scale of color and money.
Well, money for sure, because money affords you the best defense possible. And when you have a defense team that is entirely dedicated to your case, you get all the sets of eyes that you could ever imagine to work all the different scenarios that you would want to have in a case.
And you can also pay the political campaigns of that judge or the people that support that judge or have influence on that judge to influence that judge. You know, I mean, I kind of think I think that judge is who the judge is in Kyle Rittenhouse, but I also think there's a lot of dark money flowing in and around that case. You know, it would be ridiculous for me to believe that a judge that has a campaign and is elected wasn't influenced somehow by some campaign donations that will be found later. You know,
right. I have problems with both ways of how judges are appointed, how you have judges who get voted in by the public, for example, and how you have judges that are also just political appointees.
Right.
Like this, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't trust either way, because you know that, you know, a judge that gets appointed by a political system holds a certain set of beliefs that they're always going to adjudicate on, and whether that's, you know, liberal or conservative, it doesn't matter. But then when you have judges that, you know, run and get elected, you know that there's donations involved.
It's a shitty system.
You know, if your choices were, it's like, here's all the judges, they're not allowed to campaign, they don't get donations, and you get to vote on them, I would be fine with that.
Okay.
Like you remove the money aspect and the campaigning aspect of it. It's like, here's my experience. You can't do anything. I would probably be fine with that. Because there's
the idea of putting money in a coffer and then distributing that for campaigns. So publicly funded campaigns.
I don't think judges should campaign, though. Like the thing is that I know that every person's going to have their core set of beliefs, whether they're liberal in how they apply the laws or conservative. I mean, and that's something that you just have to reconcile.
Foremost, though. Like, political perspective isn't first and foremost on 95% of people's plates.
Yep. And And that's the a reality is that it's not.
Right.
But it's still there, and you have to admit it. It's one of those things that you just have to admit in the process.
Yeah.
And then after that, you know, how do you make sure that the process is fair and balanced? Like, don't get me wrong, you can have, you know, people can go out and campaign for who they think is going to be the best judge. It just can't be at the, to me, it just shouldn't be at the head of a campaign by a judge. Like, right. I just don't think money should be flowing. Like, if people want to volunteer their time to say, hey, you know, I like this particular judge. She would be our first judge of color. You know, she's, you know, like, you know, we, like here,
they just shouldn't get paid by the campaign to do that, and they shouldn't be paying the campaign for the campaign to say it.
Exactly. And there shouldn't be any campaign donations going towards any group that's going to go out and do this. It's like, this is one of those ones where judges in a very, I mean, personally, I'd like to see this with all, you know, political cases, political, but judges specifically is one where it's like, you want the system to be fair and unbiased.
Yeah.
And if the people are going to vote on a judge, then you have to remove the money as well. Because people who donate expect something. They expect something back.
And that's why they're donating. I also think, not to get too far on a tangent, but another suggestion is the Freedom to Vote Act, which in it contains transparency, an audit at the end and beginning of the campaign cycle, so that you see where the money came from and when. Mm-hmm. And I like that. And it also removes foreign money and all of that stuff. So I like transparency. I like the idea.
I like transparency when you're going to have all of these things involved. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But if you want to make it easier, none of it should be involved.
Right. I agree.
So.
Here's the bright spot in my day, Jeffrey. Let's see. Oh, we're still on Chinese Girl. I feel bad about that. She looks so nice. So, okay. So Biden had a get together with the Canadian president and the Mexican president. And I know people just see that as just some little bullshit thing. To me, it's the Justice League of our future. And so it was a bright spot to me. Somebody actually recognized that Canada, Mexico, and the United States combined have a bigger economy than China. And so that's cool. I like that. So let's grow that. Let's make that bigger, people.
Absolutely. Let's make it bigger. Let's get the rest of Central America involved.
Yeah.
You know, let's invest more in Mexico and get them to be a powerhouse along with us. You know, like we've talked about before, you know, people have a lot of migrant issues and, you know, immigration issues. And as we've said, you're not going to fix those issues unless you help build the infrastructure and workforce in these places and build the safety and security in these places to where they're like, yeah, I think I'm safe staying here now.
Yes. But you know, who I want to give me advice on my immigration policy? The guys on my borders. You know what I mean? Like having the Mexican president pushing for immigration reform and being a voice about input into it, that could reduce our need for a border altogether. And that's my dream, right? Like if we're working with these people, then there's no need to like sneak back and forth, because guess what? There's a sidewalk there. We just built it because we're working together. Mm-hmm. It's the three amigos going at it. You know what I mean?
Like, you know, if you can focus on, you know, the customs side of it, what are people bringing across the border?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can deal a lot better with, you know, are there drugs coming in? Are there illegal things coming in, going out? Instead of, you know, oh, hey, we got people that are going to come in and work, you know, and that's...
But having the ability to work with, I've always said this, an America's force, right? Mm-hmm. Mexico, Canada, all of us. Panama, you know, Uruguay, whatever's down there in Brazil, let's bring some troops up here and train us, because then we could literally track these shipments. Like right now we're like, oh, it's at the border. Now Mexico could be like, this just in, truck coming to your border. You know what I mean?
Well, and I mean, there is a lot of that that's happening already.
I'm sure.
It's just that it could be better, because, you know.
Yeah, we couldn't judge each other's peoples as we were doing it.
Right. And that's the thing is like, you know, Canada needs a workforce to do certain things. We need a workforce to do certain things. We need better places to put factories that are not in fucking China.
Because guess what? Oh, supply chain disruptions. Not if they're in Mexico, right? If Apple's in Mexico, we're getting the iPhone 14 tomorrow.
Right. And that's the thing is like those kind of jobs that pay better, that slightly, you know, places that for where they're at.
$250 a month versus $10 an hour is a big difference, unless you're somebody looking at more. Like the United States, base minimum is $15, but in Mexico, it's like $5. So it's still cheaper labor. That's what
absolutely.
I want.
Absolutely. You know, and that's the thing is that if, you know, with all those people that could have access to more stable work, and that's the biggest issue is the lack of stable work, especially as we're looking to shore up some of our own industries. Like, you know, for example, you know, if the U.S. should do it right, it's like we're not going to be dealing with chip shortages if we produce chips in the U.S., but all these other components that we're needing, let's get all of that built in Canada and Mexico and Central America and
PPE,
Latin America.
Vaccines, auto parts, everything. Let's stop exploiting slave labor in a communist regime and start putting it to work in our area. Because, I mean, I just want everybody to imagine we're not keeping people from Mexico out. We're not keeping them in. What we're doing is offering jobs in Mexico and here and allowing people to live wherever they want in the hemisphere, right? And so there is no more problem with immigration. They're going where the jobs are. You're going to see white people immigrating to Mexico. You're going to see Mexicans coming here. And that's an amazing thing. And if you include Canada, the resources, land, and possibilities are endless.
Let's talk about that, you know, because this is one of those things where it's always been like, you know, oh, we don't want them Mexicans coming here. But how many people have you heard say that when they retire, they're just going to go live in Mexico?
Mm-hmm. Every Mexican I know.
But what about white people?
They're building white people communities in Mexico because the health people that need to be watched have nursing. It's cheaper. You know what I mean?
Well, it's cheaper, and that's why people want to go live in Mexico or Costa Rica or whatever. I mean, personally, I wouldn't mind living in a place where, you know, I can go surfing and all that other fun stuff. Just spend my mornings out on the fucking water. I miss the water.
Me too.
But it's one of those things where, you know, we talk about how we, you know, how so many people don't want Mexicans coming here, but, you know, they're perfectly fine with moving into Mexico. It's like, ooh, that's the real manifest destiny of you. And it's not a good look.
But my problem is, let's keep them out. To me, always said, let's keep them impoverished, which cuts off a limb for us. You know what I mean? It's like they could be what China's doing right now could be Mexico. And our money, instead of going across the globe to a communist regime, would be building Mexico, which in cooperation would be helping us. And in our supply chain, it would become so big, we wouldn't need a border. And my statement has always been, we don't need a border. We need equilibrium in economy. So that people aren't forced to come here for jobs when they want to live there. Their home, their family, their history is there. But they come here not because they want to screw some white person, because they want to make their life better there. And so that's what I love. The equilibrium of an economy. Oof, that's exciting to me. I want people to think about that one. You know, and that just goes to no more propping up China with our fucking technology. Like, we go to Apple. Apple goes to China. China says, sure, give us half your technology and half of your profits. You know, like, China insists on being included on the board, right? If you're in China.
So
you need a Chinese funder, a Chinese funder or mentor to be in your business, to do business in China. That wouldn't be in Mexico. So your stuff would be cheaper just based on the fact that Apple doesn't have to spend money on being in that territory.
Mm-hmm.
And you could feel better about not using, you're not exploiting cheap labor like that.
Right.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. That one was my big one of the day. Apparently our subsidies are affecting Canada's electric car market. So that's something we need to work out, you know?
And The problem, yeah.
It's a small thing. Canada has always provided us with services while we provide them with product. And Trump kind of altered that a little bit.
Yep.
You know?
And that's, you know, and my hope is that, you know, we can figure out how to help boost their electric car market, whether mm-hmm. it's production here in the U.S. or,
yeah.
you know, easier access to the market. Because, you know, I've said it 1,000 times, and I know I've said it so many on this show. There's no reason why Detroit couldn't have become the electric motor city.
It will.
I think it should. I think Detroit could come roaring back as the electric motor city. And that's, you know, there's a really interesting one. I saw that I saw someone convert an old C10 Chevy pickup into an electric vehicle. And I mean to tell you, dude, it looked fucking good. I love that classic style. Like, huh? I want an old box Chevy. I love those old box Chevys. They were fucking hardy as hell. You could do, you could just, this thing, you couldn't kill those things, man.
Right.
There's just something beautiful about them too. But now, like, give me that classic look, but make it electric. Oh, fuck yeah. I would down for that. I want that in a heartbeat. It's like, do I want a modern pickup? Absolutely. But if I could have an electrical 77 Chevy pickup, oh, fuck, are you kidding? I have that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Modernize that thing a little bit.
The future is 30 years. That's what it's going to be. Start now. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God. I would love that so much. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the rumble of that old 350 Chevy. Mm-hmm. It has a place in my heart like no other. But at the same time, too, like, my need for a pickup to haul things and do things like that has never been that great.
Right.
But it's still there. And the justification is like, I can't justify how much gas it sucks up. I can't justify how much maintenance there has been on it. But man, if Chevy could just pull out that old fucking, you know, 77 step side look, but put it in an electric motor package, I would buy that fucker in a heartbeat because it is such a beautiful look.
And it's a short walk to say electric vehicles release us from our independence from foreign oil, creating an America first scenario.
Absolutely. Right?
It detaches us for dependence, which is Trump's thing. So everyone, you can't complain about high gas prices if you're not buying gas, right?
Buying electricity that's made in America.
Right. But framing it as you're going to save the planet by buying an electric car might work for one market, but for another market, eliminating independence.
You know? Eliminating dependence on foreign markets, yeah.
Right. That works. I think that might be a messaging strategy for, you know, Democrats are always scared that they'll lose their ideal versions if they come to the middle to talk, you know? And I always see us as like the MPs that go running to the wounded on the other side and that we're like, hey, guess what? It's not that bad. Come over here. Come here. Let's talk, you know? I'm not trying to pull somebody to the left flank of the wall. We're running into the middle. We're running into the right, pulling them back to the middle and saying, here's a safe zone. You know what I mean?
Right. You know, and that's the thing is that, you know, I want these big oil companies to become big energy companies and make up energy here in America and not buy it from other places. And they are. They really are. Yeah. And I want to encourage them to do that faster. I want to encourage us to have the infrastructure to support electric vehicles. I want to be able to have cool fucking electric vehicles that, you know, there's some of them that are looking really fucking futuristic. I want that fucking classic look. That box Chevy with that chrome bumper.
You get a 63 split window Vette electric? I'm fucking buying that if I have right, money, you know?
Right, give me that fucking classic yeah. look and give me some modern muscle
van. Give me a 50s panel van.
Fuck. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, dude, like a fucking Chevy Bel Air. Oh, yeah.
With the whale fins.
Mm. You know it. Give me that fucking... or what was it? A 63 Mercury Comet with wow. that fucking... with an electric on it. Oh, man. Like that classic look, you know, just enhance the safety yeah. of them, you know, with, you know, give us that old classic look with the modern safety on it, the crumple yeah. zones and everything. And
modern interior, outside classic, right?
Oh, yeah. Like yeah. it would just be absolutely gorgeous. That style stuck around because, mm-hmm. you know, that style has stuck around and become popular because it's been etched in our memories.
Hell like, yeah.
Like that, you know, 84 Chevy pickup, you know, with it just, it's still there in my memory and it yeah. still is just as beautiful as ever.
They made cars smaller and more efficient because of the fuel, right?
Right.
So what you're saying is if we go to electric, we can then suddenly have a trunk that'll fit 10 people again.
Right. Oh, God, imagine a big old Lincoln Continental where yeah. you could fit 10 people, you know, five you in the front bench.
You didn't need a pickup truck yet.
Seriously. Oh, God, Debbie would kill for this, but, you know, freaking El Camino, that's all electric.
Oh, my God, yes.
Oh, hell yeah, all electric El Camino. Yeah. Oh, my God, Debbie has a Prius right now, but Debbie would be like, fuck this thing, I want an El Camino.
Yes, my grandma used to have a yellow, like, 50s Cadillac. She always had the newest version of the Cadillac. I'm from a great era, 71 I was born, so I got to see cars from that era all over the place. It's a yeah. shame what's happened to vehicles. My neighbor has like the new Charger, and then somebody was saying the Charger is owned by Fiat, and I was like, oh, that doesn't even go together for me. You know, like right. that hurts my brain. I could never buy a Charger from Fiat.
It hurts. No, yeah. and I think that's, you know, one of the glories of what could be done. I mean, Hummer has come out with an all-electric Hummer now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's fantastic.
I think the big one was Ford, the F-150, because that's yep. like, that's a huge...
Ford is putting out an F-100 as an all-electric.
What? I didn't even yeah. know there was an F-100.
No, it's their old 70s model, dude.
Really?
Yeah, it's got a frunk in, you know, it's got the frunk, but it's yeah, go check it out. It looks fucking killer as a classic. It's going to be an all electric.
I love that.
You know, I think it's fantastic.
People were complaining about this past climate summit that there was fossil fuel representatives there. And I thought to my, people were complaining about that. And I was like, aren't they the people we want there? Like, don't we want to have them be a part of the discussions about the transition? Like, I don't see them as much fighting an entire summit as going there to learn that, like, where, how do we stay ahead of the curve and financially? Because, you know, they want to be ahead of green technologies so they can make the money off of it, right? So I'm not mad that they were there. What do you think about that?
No, we shouldn't be mad that they were there. There'd be like a Republican sitting in on a Democratic convention to see what, right. you know, what they've got to do. But, you know, if there's something that, you know, their constituents can benefit from, now the question is, you know, how do you create that benefit, but in conservative terms, yeah. you know, it's no different to me. It's like, hey, how do we learn about what's going to happen, but put our ideas into it so that way we can make it happen in a way that actually works for us. Because once yeah. again, governments will decide what's going to happen, and then when they try to do it themselves, they fuck it up. But when you right. put private industry in the reins, they usually come up with a better, more efficient in terms of production and cost model that is going to be able to be more widely adopted. Because here's the thing, is like with a lot of these technologies, when the government is the one that pushes it and they're the only ones that sell it, it's usually really fucking expensive. So what does that mean? Only the rich people get it. But right. when you can create different tiers that allow for people of various income models to buy it, mm. great. That means that you're able to get that technology into more hands. Sure, it might right. not be like a Tesla for the rich people. It might be a Chevy Bolt.
Right, right.
But guess what? That still has viable and valuable use.
The goal is for everybody to want what's best for the general public or people, right? Like in government, right, we want both Democrats and Republicans having all the information they can have so that they create a future for the people, right? Mm-hmm. So like, it's important to realize that if one side is trying to score points by screwing Joe Biden, it hurts everybody. It hurts all Americans when Joe Biden loses. It hurts all Americans when Donald Trump loses. It hurts all Americans when this happens. So we gotta stop with what we're doing in the division, because it's about helping the people. That Build Back Better thing, like, it does a lot. I wasn't happy about the process. I'm still not happy about some of the things that aren't included that never even got attention. Like, that was my problem, but the things that are in it really are going to make a difference to people that need that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a safety net that like Germany built over 40 years that we didn't. So mm-hmm. we need a safety net, and I appreciate that, because I don't think people understand when Republicans come back to power, their plan is to gut Medicare and cut Social Security. And I was trying to explain to my friend that if you eliminate the payroll tax, then that Social Security doesn't get funded. But as Jeffrey told us, our borrowing power comes from our constant flow into Social Security, and we won't be able to raise a deficit if we don't have something to borrow on. You know, it's a collapse of everything. Yep. If we don't have that giant bank account to borrow against, we fall apart.
And we move into austerity measures, which, I mean, honestly, a lot of times I think we should anyways. We're spending at a rate that, you know, if Social Security collapses, there's a lot of bills that come due. And guess
right.
what?
We don't have $29 trillion to
pay
back right now.
We do in Social Security. And then the American people don't have Social Security. And
well, that's
what
I'm saying. If they cut off the payroll tax, we have 5 years until it's dry.
Yep.
Which means we won't have $29 trillion to pay back if we get it. You know what I mean?
And fundamentally, that's a problem. We shouldn't be borrowing at the rate that we are.
Agreed.
I will say that that's one thing that I do appreciate. Like I know everybody shits on Warren Buffett, but I like the Warren Buffett model. Is every time that debt goes 3% above GDP, Congress doesn't get paid until they fucking fix the budget.
Yeah, but don't fix it by cutting services to the poorest people in the country. You know,
well,
I'm sorry, if you're gonna fix the deficit by cutting Medicare, well, I depend on that. Please don't do that. You know?
But here's the thing is that as it stands right now, that's gonna get cut if we end up going into a default.
Mm. Yeah, like, exactly. Exactly.
You're gonna lose, so that's where our problem lies right now is that mm-hmm. like you're on the cusp of losing it either way. The question is what, how do we stop that from happening in a way that makes sense? You know, and this is where, number one, people are getting pissed about our rising interest in isolationism. And I don't see us as becoming isolationist. I do see us as having, you know, still a sizable, you know, military availability, like having our ships sailing around and ensuring rite of passage for commerce.
Sure.
But
we did in the fucking 1900s and 1800s.
Right. But I don't see us as, you know, I don't see us as someone who should be getting involved in being the world police. Right. Europe needs to get their own shit together in order to defend themselves. I mean, it's been, what, 80 years since the Second World War began for us, almost? Mm-hmm. This year will be 80 years. And the reality is that we still got troops in Europe. And Europe needs to defend itself, you know, against these and whatever issues there might be.
Oh, you mean the 100,000 masked Russian soldiers on the fucking Ukraine border on Crimea?
And that's where, like, we can have very specific needs, you know, very specific targeted needs met.
Uh-huh.
You know, where
But Europe is waiting for us to send 100,000 troops to counter that when they could just each send 20,000 troops from every country, right?
And yeah, or 10,000 or 5,000.
And then we can fund in the way we want to and send troops and support the way we want to. Like, fight your own battles and we'll back you up, Europe. You know what I mean?
Exactly. You know, it's, you know,
it's a consensus.
Exactly. And then that way it's not, oh, hey, the U.S. is getting involved in this bullshit again. No, it's the European Union, and then they can call in the U.S. for support.
I think that's what I'm talking about with the America's force. I know it sounds like Space Force, but a NATO for this hemisphere. And then, yes, like you're saying, oh, the European Union needs help. Let's address that with our America's NATO, right? And then, and then, yeah, they can have a delegate here too. You know, like we had people come in and watch our elections from the European Union, from NATO or the UN or wherever it was. I'm not saying cut our international cooperation, but we need an America's force to defend. To defend and also to cut the conversations, you know, because I know somebody from Honduras might have an issue and call some senator here. He's not the guy to call, right? Or tries to call some mayor from here. That's not the way it works. We need better transparency and communication at all times.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
But I just loved seeing those leaders. I wish, Jeffrey, I don't know why it gave me a buzz, like it was the end of Justice League, seeing those three guys stand together, you know? And it was just the possibilities of it all. It's just, there's so much rhetoric going around that we never focus on how to fix something that long term, but those three guys, like, just put it in my face, like, there it is, the possibility.
And that's what I think both parties that are in charge right now need to really sit down and figure out together. You know, us alone is not going to be enough to counter China.
Right.
But the three of us together can be a significant force, and a force for each other, and a helping hand for each other in the rise of rise of a country that seems to be hell bent on, you know, in the case of Taiwan, aggression.
Yeah, well, they say we want to one China through negotiation or force. They don't care.
Yeah, they say through negotiation. It's like putting up a dead or alive poster. You know that fucking person's coming in dead.
Yeah, right. Or they're not going to stay alive once they get in. Yeah. Oh no, I totally get that. I just see it as us just complaining about something that we're spending money on. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
That's, to me, it's like somebody going, I got to get rid of all these leftovers in my fridge. Yeah, you put them there, you know? Like,
right. So.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. What else did I have? Oh, shit. I thought I was out of options. So, Republican Congressman Paul Grossar depicted scenes of anime in which he, killed AOC threatened AOC to kill the president
and then is fighting Biden
and so the response from Republican leadership, which I think is gross, was we're gonna try and censor you when you get back. Like, who's doing that? Have you seen a Democrat actually depicting the death of a Republican? Like, can we draw a line at the threats?
We do have a line, and I'm going to point back to Kathy Griffin when she had that image of her with Donald Trump's head.
Right.
I was like, ooh, that's yikes. That's
but
that's,
guess what? So were we. So were Democrats, and so were independents. We were like, oh no, you don't go there. No.
Like, cause that in and of itself is a huge problem. It's like, you know, that should have been the line in the sand, and both parties should have been like, okay, we got to pull this back. This is not okay.
Somebody mentioned, remember Al Franken? And I was like, you know, I've heard Al Franken.
Al Franken
speak. And honestly, he's not the most woke individual. Like, he's not.
No.
I'm not saying that he's a caveman, but I'm saying there might have been a lot of underlying activities that led to that final removal. I'm not trying to judge a situation I don't know enough about behind the scenes, but I think we should all. I think this was Democrats drawing a line, saying, "Don't do that." She's a woman. She's a congresswoman. She's a woman of color. Like, there's so many reasons why you just don't do this. And we need to draw a line in the sand. Like, privately, even Paul Grossar was like, oh, that was a mistake. But then they censured him and he retweeted it like a dumbass.
Yeah, that was I will say, though, that it does highlight a couple of things. Like, number one, Kathy Griffin had the FBI show up and interrogate her. Now the question is did Paul Gosar get that same treatment? And I'm going to go with no. Why? Right. Politicians don't have to do that. So if the threshold becomes that politicians can vaguely tweet death threats to other politicians, which, let's be real honest, if you know being an edgelord and tweeting videos of killing politicians is your thing, you should probably stop, because yeah, you don't want that visit from the green weenie, number one. And number two, like, especially if you're a politician, like, if this is what it's going to become, is we're going to just depict our party killing the other party, then, you know, this isn't, this experiment in democracy isn't going to work for much longer.
I think that's too big of a scope for people. I like the theory of what if the person that sits at the desk next to you just fucking showed you a knife and went like that, like slit their throat motion. Like, just like one of your coworkers at Burger King just looking at you going, I'm going to fucking kill you after work. And that's what it was to me. A coworker talking to another coworker, because these people work in the same buildings. They live in the same town for a period of time. They are in the same circles. And that would suck to just be out to eat one day and see Paul Grossart. I know his name is Gozart.
Grosser.
But just seeing him, like, you know, sitting there at the table next to you, that would be disturbing to me after that happened. And it would be disturbing to me if I got a threat from any coworker and then I saw them outside of work, you know?
Well, and especially when we're in an era where people are looking for a reason to do something dumb.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know if someone is going to look at what that was, you know, depicting AOC, and then decide, yeah, you know what, fuck it, today is the day. Or if someone goes, I can't stand what Gosar did, so I've got to get revenge. You know, right. It's one of those things where it's like, this is not a healthy option for anybody, and this shit's got to stop. It's like, look, battle bad policy, for fuck's sake. Like,
right.
Like, there's plenty of bad policy that the left is pushing. There's plenty of bad policy that the right is pushing. But when you're making vague, you know, references to death threats and you killing people, like, that's not politics anymore. That's just fucking dumb.
That's you not knowing politics. That's honestly you not wanting to sit at a board meeting or a commission meeting and shut up and watch the process. It's you not going online to see how the process works. That's you trying to cut through all of that and say, yeah, I know everybody else has waited their turn, but fuck that, I'm louder. And that doesn't work. That doesn't work for me. Intimidation, I think, goes to the back of the line every time.
Absolutely.
I heard your buddy on Rachel Maddow, by the way.
Which
Anthony?
One?
Anthony?
Ah.
I had his name in my head until I went to say it. Damn it. And I didn't write it down because it wasn't. I was going to talk to you about it off air. Fuentes?
Oh, Adrian. Adrian.
Yes. Adrian. He was on the news. I guess somebody's trying to start a new investigation.
Mark Brnovich, the AG of Arizona.
Fuck yeah. I love it. The guy asked him, how many of the votes are paper and how many are not? And Adrian was like, they're all paper. And the fact that you ask that, you're asking that question, means you know nothing. I was just like, fuck yeah. I want this guy. I want to talk to him, but well, not and about this.
and that's the thing is that, like, you know, Adrian ran a great election top to bottom. Like,
he did.
You can get pissed about how many places he opened up for voting, the way that he's defended mail-in voting, you know. I mean, for fuck's sake, you know, we've had mail-in voting in Washington, and our Secretary of State has been a Republican for God knows how long.
Right.
And Biden just actually picked her up.
Yep.
She's Kim Wyman. She's a Republican. I will say I didn't vote for her, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that she's ran solid elections here in the U.S., here in Washington. And when it came to the voting process, she's been very vocal about the fact that, you know, Trump's stuff was bullshit, and she's been the target of the GOP here in the state. Yeah. And the fact, you know, she ran a great election ship, and the fact that Biden sees that and sees that, you know, she's a conservative that's running a great election process and picked her up is fantastic, you know.
Biden is so, purple, by the way. He's not red. He's not blue. He's purple.
He's purple. And that's what people need to understand is that he's a moderate. He always has been. Uh-huh. And the fact that people are calling like the infrastructure bill communism is just fucking hilarious to me.
Oh, the Biden McConnell infrastructure bill.
Yeah, the Biden McConnell infrastructure bill. Like, infrastructure is good for everybody. Like, y'all need roads.
It reminds me of the kid crying for ice cream while he's eating ice cream. Like, I want ice cream as he's eating ice cream. You know, like, conservatives are like, yeah, that's communist. Put the road right there.
Right. Right. And so for me, it's just like, wow, this is something
performative,
special.
Right? It starts to become performative.
It is. And it's like, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to fight this communist bullshit. No, no, no. It needs to be 30 feet wide.
Right.
It's so bad for you. And
the lead pipes right there. Thanks.
can we get a spot welder over here? Can you tack that in place? Thank you.
Thanks for the job. I'm going to go do the work on the bridge. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like if we're going to call infrastructure like that communist, then it means that Eisenhower was the biggest communist that we ever had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which but Joe Biden almost, didn't get elected to be Eisenhower. Yeah.
Hey, no, shut no, up,
whatever.
God damn it, dog. Sorry, the yelling way, at the dog because the dog decided that it's going to eat shoelaces. You son of a bitch.
The Billy. Way I explain it is like the rich people got their tax break, 1.9, right? We're getting our money. In infrastructure, that's great because we all get to use it. We're sharing it with the rich people. Do you know what Elizabeth Warren snuck in to build back better, though?
What?
I don't know if you realized it. It's like almost a form of your flat tax. It's a base corporate tax of 15%. So mm-hmm. You're never going to be able to close the loophole beyond 15%.
Is it? You know, and I was actually thinking about, you know, what the tax system could look like. Mm-hmm. You know, could you imagine if you got to pick, you know, instead of having your tax money go to the federal government, if you could just be like, let's see here. So instead of, you know, it's like, I've got my social, you'll have like your base, like, here's where this is going to go. So like Social Security, uh-huh. Medicare. But then beyond that, it's like, okay, well, what else could I pay? You know, where else mm-hmm. do I want my federal taxes to go? This is how much money I have left over.
Defense.
It's like, okay, I want to, you know, some people are going to go, I want my money to go to defense. I want some of my money to go to infrastructure. I want some of my money to go towards education.
A dollar to each.
Could you imagine if you got to sit down and say, you know what, I'm not big in supporting the military, but I want to, you know, support education and healthcare and infrastructure. Or you have somebody who goes, yeah, I'm not really a big fan on supporting the education system, but I definitely need some more infrastructure for policing and the military. And then that way it's like, okay, people get to actually pick where they want the, it's, you know, find the policies that are working of welfare for, you know, food systems. Like, I wouldn't mind having my tax money go towards food benefits for, you know, people that need it in this country.
Exactly. That's like an endpoint dream of mine where we all vote on like where we put our 401k money, where we put our tax dollars. Yeah.
I think it would be fantastic to be able to do that.
I think it would. That's part of transparency to me, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, even if it was like a beta test faux thing, just to see how the government spent money and how people on an average would have ranked spending money, right? To me, that would be a major thing. We're putting it into, we're spending money to Israel. But look, people say that they wouldn't do that, you know?
I would love to actually get like a breakdown of, it's like, here's the taxes that you paid for 2020. Mm-hmm. Here's where each, like down to the penny, got spent.
That would be cool.
I would love to see that personally, because then it's like, because then you would actually have this information of, oh, okay, so apparently only a penny of mine went towards education. I'm not really thrilled with that.
Right. Or, wow, my money went to incarceration.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, I love the idea of being able to sit down and see, number one, where my money's going. But number two, be able to say, I don't want my money going there. I don't support that.
Because honestly, I think what the unsaid thing about capitalism and democracy is that we fund our own destruction.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And we don't realize that. Like, I always say I buy Charmin because I don't buy Northern. Northern is the Koch brothers. Koch brothers represent a downfall of civilization to me. So I don't buy that. But you can. I don't. There's other things I buy, but other companies I won't support. I can't. I like Fox. Nah, if the game's on Fox, I'm not going to watch. ESPN, hey, how you doing? You know what I mean? Like, I just don't randomly watch Fox now. I don't watch 20. But that's me. Like, I like to be feel good about that stuff. You know?
Absolutely.
Other people, we need to start boycotting with our wallets as they take our votes away, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's our money that. So, Jeffrey, I watched. I've been into documentaries, and we're towards the end of the show, so it's the recommendation portion. It's called Music Box Jagged, and it's a documentary about Alanis Morissette. And
nice.
I didn't know anything about her. I mean, Jagged Little Pill came out, and I was like, oh my God, a woman being honest and telling me everything. Ooh. So it was like the encyclopedia. I would turn to hand in my pocket and be like, oh, that's what they're thinking. Or, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
All those songs. But the documentary actually was like from when she was a young kid to like the work she's doing now. And she said something to me that was really upsetting. And it made me think of something you were talking about. And it's this, by the time women come out and into their own and stop giving a fucks, they've gone through like a trail of men just trying to destroy them. And she had said like, it came to a point when I was 15 where every single man of every age hit on me. They didn't care. It was okay. And she said, I just knew it was going to happen. And I waited to find out how long it would take. And I was like, that's how every woman has to go through life until men just stop and being attracted to a woman, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that she just did that album and it wasn't about any one person and all, you know, it just, the way she's recovered in the end was really just, it made me smile. She doesn't look anything like Alanis Morissette, you know, that I remember, but she's just so nice and cool and been through a buttload of therapy. And I really think it's something people should watch because it really shows you what you're doing to women and how it affects them when they're in later life. I don't think those men would have hit on Alanis Morissette if they could have seen her crying about her therapy in the end of her life. I like to hope, you know.
I'd like to hope that too. I just don't have as much faith in people as others do.
Yeah.
But you know, like, I mean, I remember when that came out and I was, you know, I want to say I was like 9, 10 years old when I remember it coming across, you know, VH1 and MTV and, you know, it's in looking back now, like I finally look back on 90s music. It's not my favorite.
Right.
I finally look back on it simply by the pure variety. Like, especially when it came to, you know, girl power, women rock bands, women fronted bands.
No
like,
doubt.
There was a
Lilith
lot.
Fair, all that,
yeah. Lisa Loeb, Alanis Morissette, Meredith Brooks.
Yeah.
You had a lot of really good music come out at that point where it's just like, you know, you had all of this corporatism bullshit. And it was like in the spirit of grunge, this all just broke out and broke every piece of it.
Yeah.
And I think it was, and that was fantastic. But then, you know, in the same token, that faded just as fast with the advent of, you know, bubblegum pop supergroups and all of that.
Mm.
And it's felt like that there's been somewhat of a void there since.
Agreed.
That moment in time musically was just so wild and so weird. And like I think of it as the, you know, the 90s standing the music industry on its head, because they went from predictable hair bands and bubblegum pop girls and all of a sudden it was just like fucking dirty and it was just all over the place and it was
Courtney
fantastic.
Love and flannels and Alanis Morissette. You know, but people were like, it's such an angry album, but I didn't get that from the album. Like Head Over Feet and like Ironic. I thought those were hopeful songs. And like I said, I didn't know what women were thinking. So to get Gwen Stefani and Alanis Morissette to be like, here, fuck you, here, you know, was so nice to me because women weren't honest. They just tried pacifying me because I was that guy, you know. And now I look back and I'm like, I didn't hurt women because of things that Alanis Morissette said she didn't like on Jagged Little Pill. There's things I didn't do because I heard her say that that hurt her, you know? And I think she might like that. She might appreciate that, you know?
And that's, and that's just it. It's like, you know, in terms of how things have progressed musically, like the 2020 era of people being able to record and produce their own music and put it out with a few clicks is absolutely fantastic to me.
Yeah, it is.
And I hope that we see a resurgence of music like we did in the 90s for girl groups, you know, and female fronted bands, and
and
not just them, but I mean LGBTQ music, and you know, just the entire gamut. I love the fact that, you know, a person can write a hit song and not have a fucking, you know, record company involved. I think it's fantastic.
I like that somebody can just write a song and be like, I fucking like this, and somebody putting it out and finding the audience. You know what I mean? I also watched a Joan Jett documentary, and she was like, nobody's pushing it. Let's just put it out ourselves. And it just went global, you know, and it was like everybody loved it. But record producers were like, her? No, I wouldn't fuck her. Don't put it out.
Right.
And it's just so funny to me that, I mean, she's in everything. I don't know. I like documentaries. I also started watching one on a band called Pentagram. So I don't know. I like music documentaries. I like seeing how people went through it. Joan Jett did the same thing. Every man had to hit on her and she had to say no, you know, and it was just like, and it made me think that poor women, imagine how awesome a woman would be if they didn't have to just grow within a bowl that we made for them. Like if they could be themselves strong without men going, oh no, you're great, but you need to be great within my parameters, and doing that through every man they meet, you know?
Yeah.
I love that. Sorry. All right. This has been Public Access America. I guess we're all done. Any final comments?
You know, take some time for yourself. Just take some time to enjoy what you got around you. Relax. Find some inner peace. That's all I got for today.
All right. I love you. That's it. Have a great day, everybody.
To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you.
This is our moment.
This is our time. To those who seek peace and security, we support you.
Yes, we can.
And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright tonight, we prove once more comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbow. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life.
Ask not.
Yes, we can.
What your country can do for you.
I have a dream.
Ask what you can do for your country.
My poor little children.
Yes, we can.
One day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression.
In this lifetime, you don't have to prove nothing to nobody except yourself.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
That's how winning is done.
Welcome to Public Access America.
Yes, we can.
Sunday live streams on YouTube.
I wanted to run out of that tunnel for my dad.
On Twitter.
Prove what?
Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Smart Radio Public, and Spotify.
Yes, we can.
Public Access America. History in the making. Making history in the making.